This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Hey, welcome in. This Day in History is back. July 26th is here on your summer calendar, and so is This Day in History on lineupmedia.fm, breaking down the events that have occurred throughout the annals of time on this program right here. Armand Kachigian, my co-host. My name's Tony Hubert, and we're brought to you by Amazon.com and Audible.com. Plus, we want you to check out the over 40 shows that are available. 40 podcasts, Armand, available at lineupmedia.fm.
And what are we, number 39?
No, we're number 7 in the network. Oh. We thank all of our listeners. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean. Many of you have, and we thank you because our little program here has been growing over the past several months by quite a bit. We had our best week ever, Armand, just last week.
I think the growth of our audience is inversely proportional to how much you speak. So you're saying our audience grows more the more you talk. Correct.
Huh.
That's right. Directly proportional and inversely proportional to what you say.
I'll have to poll our audience on that. Yeah. We got a lot of great birthdays today.
Oh, by the way, but we have a death I think we should probably speak up.
Yeah,
on.
Let's go ahead.
Barbara Marx, or Barbara Sinatra, whatever you want to remember.
Yes.
She was married to Zeppo.
Yes.
And she divorced him and married
Frank.
Sinatra. She was 90. Yeah.
She was 90.
Yeah.
How many wives did Frank have?
Four, I think.
She passed away. She passed away early this morning or late last night.
Yes, it was yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. The 25th. And I see. Did she still live out in Palm Springs or California?
I think she was out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. Let's see. Who else was he married to?
Well, he was married to Mia Farrow.
That's correct.
That's an odd one. Did he ever marry Ava Gardner?
Yeah, they were married.
Boy,
let's see.
Boy, did she ruin some people.
I was just watching Night of the Iguana.
Yeah.
She's sexy. Mia Farrow, Ava Gardner, Nancy Barbato.
Barbato? Which one is Nancy Sinatra's mom?
Ooh, probably Nancy, huh? Barbato, I think.
Huh? I don't know.
I don't think it's Mia Farrow.
No.
It's not Ava Gardner. She never had kids.
No,
so it had to be Nancy.
Yeah.
Unless it was out of wedlock.
Ooh, but maybe.
Frank wouldn't do that.
And who is Frank Jr.?
He's Catholic.
Who's Frank Jr.'s mom?
I'm going to say the same, huh?
Same?
I don't know.
All righty. Well, yeah, Barbara Marx.
Yeah. So,
heck
bad.
Of a life,
90
though.
Years old. Man.
Heck of a life, man.
Not bad.
Hollywood insider. All right. The events today. I'm not in love with the events today. I like the birthdays today, Armand. Got a couple good deaths, too.
All right. Well, let's get to it.
All right. Now, here's one right off the bat. I got to know if you think is even needed.
Now?
No, then.
Then?
And
well,
now.
Then, yeah.
I think I know the answer.
Now?
Now. So here it is. July 26, 1775. What would become the Department of the United States Post Office is established by the Second Continental Congress.
Right. I guess Ben Franklin was the first Postmaster General, I think.
Yeah. And then you
then
have.
Then we need it. Now, of course. Get rid of it.
Well, we have supplemental. Means we have UPS, we have FedEx.
Yeah, we have all. Okay, we don't. What do we need?
Have Airborne.
Who sends
have
a letter?
DHL. No one sends.
All
a
you
letter.
Get is bad news from the post office.
And I got to tell you, you know what competition in this space has done? I think it's actually made parts of the post office service better.
Of course,
because of this, the flat rate box. If you have a kid in college, you got to love that flat rate box. Okay, you just go to the retail. Sort of post office lobby. Pick up.
Is that how you send her to college?
Pick up a box. Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly
that's how they
do
come
it.
Out. A liberal box.
Oh, stop.
Yeah. All tied up with a nice
stop.
Bow on it.
Stop. You throw whatever you need into the box.
Yeah.
You print out your little sticker.
What the hell do you send?
Oh, well, we send her all sorts of stuff. All sorts of stuff.
Just send money.
But that's what she prefers.
Right. Don't send any cookies.
No, grandmothers and moms like to send stuff. I have sent her all of nothing in her 2 years of college.
The only time I needed anything was when I was living on Montserrat, when I was going to that.
You're out on the island?
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
I was going to that foreign medical school, And they didn't have anything on that island. Yeah, then I wanted things sent to me.
Do you think early post office workers went postal?
No, that was until like the 80s, wasn't it? Who was the first? They have the original postal guy.
They lost it,
the 81 or something?
They lost it. I'll tell you this, though. The bureaucracy of the post office, if you just walk into a post office, some are really good. Others are just like, you ring the bell and nothing happens.
That's
nothing.
That's government work in general.
Nothing happens.
That's why there's no right. Exactly.
I've been in a line of three guys where two of the guys have left the lobby. They're like, well, this ain't going to happen today. 1788, New York becomes your 11th state in the Union.
I wish they'd stayed out.
Why? New York, beautiful state, good state. You got to love New York.
Except for the city, yeah.
Are you surprised that the city and the state are still one?
I'm surprised that we're still one with Chicago. We have nothing to do with Chicago.
Yeah, okay. I'll take the money.
Okay, here it is. You got to be kidding me. Earliest use of the phrase, you want to take a guess on going postal?
1920s.
You're way off.
Really?
I thought it was the 80s. 1993.
Oh, 1993.
St. Petersburg Times.
Okay.
I'll be damned. 35 people have been killed at 11 post office shootings since 1983.
Jesus.
The USPS does not approve of the term going postal. I'll bet they don't.
No, I'm sure they don't. Oh. Well, here's a guy who refused to go postal. It cost him his job eventually, but on this date, he gets a job. July 26, George B. McClellan, 1861, assumes command of the Army of the Potomac following the
McDowell
shock
getting his ass kicked.
Union defeat of McDowell at the first battle of Bull Run.
It wasn't that he lost the battle. It was he ruined the picnic on the hill.
Yeah, you can't be.
Don't do it in front of people.
You can't be losing. Yeah,
people are getting indigestion from this. You got to fire
There's
the guy.
There's no doubt. 1908.
Actually, a few things about McClellan. You do know he ran for president.
Yes, he did. He ran on the ticket against Lincoln in 1864.
He was governor of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. And then they sacked him after Antietam. That wasn't fun.
That was the largest single loss of American life in one day.
Yeah, the Antietam.
Still to this day, I believe, right?
Probably.
Over 22,000.
Yeah, that was a bad one. I don't think we've ever lost anything like that.
One day. Because the Gettysburg casualties are massive, but they're spread over 3 days. Antietam is...
That's Maryland, by the way.
There's a good book on that, but I think it's by Stephen Sears called Ground Runs Red or...
Now, Robert E. Lee said he was the best general he faced.
McClellan?
Yeah.
When he chose to fight, he might have been.
I don't know.
He didn't choose to fight much,
though.
Well,
they asked Grant.
He must have read The Art of War.
Oh, Sun Tzu? But anyway, Grant said he's the biggest mystery of the war.
McClellan?
I don't know what that's supposed
to mean. Because he didn't. He always needed more. He always needed
everything's
more.
Everything's a mystery to Grant. He was drunk. But, here again, these historians reassess these guys.
Yeah.
Is that what historians do? What the fuck do these guys do?
Well, I think
we're historians.
Historians have a couple roles.
Sit around trying to reassess generals from the Civil War.
One is the first and primary role is to try to establish the facts as best they can. The second role, I would say, is a little beyond historian.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
Okay, hold on. Establish the facts.
How?
You look at correspondence, you look at archival material, and you do the best that you can. Here's where it gets subjective, is when you start to try to put those facts into a context that you weren't there for, whether it was 10 years ago or 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, but listen, I tell you exactly what Lincoln said, and you still don't believe me about the slavery issue and why he fought you know what he said. And people, maybe you do, but people still don't believe it. That slavery had nothing to do with the Civil War, why he fought it. I have quotes from Lincoln, but these don't count. So, and like this, we're going to reassess McClellan.
Can you put the quotes into context? Can you put McClellan
the
context?
It's very hard to do. When a guy says, I am not fighting this war for slavery, I'm fighting to keep the Union together. What context do you want?
Well, you're going
to
take him at his word.
Yeah.
And is he saying it for political purposes?
All right, well, there you go. I guess. He's lying.
No, it's not that he's lying.
Well, there you go. Why? That's what I'm saying. What is the purpose of these jerks?
Historians are jerks.
Yeah. What do they do?
Oh, my.
I mean, like podiatry, okay?
Then we're,
foot doctor,
you're
I try to find better ways to treat my patients.
Yes, you do.
What the hell do historians do? Try to reassess things.
No, they tried to assess things.
Well, they've been assessed. The guy was a shitty general. That's what I'm saying. Now, later, that's what brought this whole argument up that lately he's been reassessed. Well, maybe he wasn't so bad. Who the fuck's got time to sit around and assess whether McClellan was a great general or a lousy one?
Historians?
Yeah. Boy. Dismal.
Well, you just don't like
anybody.
Get a
real job.
How are we?
I like strippers.
How are we going to evaluate history?
It's already been evaluated.
Okay.
The guy sucked.
Okay. Someone had to evaluate.
Yeah, it's done. The evaluation's done. Do something else.
1908. And I love that we had an attorney general by this name.
Well, it's Napoleon's like nephew or
yes,
something.
Yes, General Charles Joseph Bonaparte. Right. He's the U.S. Attorney General in 1908.
Founder of the FBI, right?
And he issues this order to immediately staff what's called the Office of the Chief Examiner. Now, about a decade to a decade and a half later, almost 2 decades later, Armand, this would become and be renamed the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And J. Edgar would show up, and he would run that for almost, 50 years?
I think because he was it 23 to 72, something like that?
So to think that our FBI has a...
Yeah, Napoleon's like great-grandnephew
grand-nephew
or something like that.
Has a distant, but,
not that distant.
Sort of odd
direct
link,
descendant.
Yeah, to Napoleon is just bizarre.
Yeah,
but it's fun.
That trivia question, I've been asked that trivia question.
Oh, yeah, that's a good trivia
that comes
question
up,
then.
Yeah.
So how do they phrase it? This
department was begun by Napoleon's great, founder of this department was the great grandson of European leader. You know, they've got.
Well, it's true. All right. 1941, response to the Japanese occupying French Indochina. You know what old FDR does there, Armand?
The wrong thing.
He seizes all Japanese assets in the United States on July 26th.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I don't know if today is the day you can start the clock ticking towards Pearl Harbor.
No, it had already been a few days before he refused to sell oil to them. Okay. We're going to totally, Then I don't know when it was that he refused to sell scrap metal. Now he's telling them get out of. I mean, he's chivying them into war. I mean, so obvious. He's very subtle, isn't he?
How would an historian interpret this?
I just told you.
Oh, so you played historian?
Yeah,
here.
An hour a day, and then I go do my job.
Okay.
I'm not all day contemplating what a jerk FDR is.
In 1945, now this is really odd for me to think. Because two things
What's
happen.
So odd about this?
Hold on. Because two things happen on this date. And if you asked me the second one first, and I'd say, oh, yeah, this guy's still in charge over across the pond. But the Labor Party wins the UK general election of July 5th. And this is the date that Winston Churchill is removed from power as the prime minister. And the war has only been over for about a month and 2 weeks.
He's still fighting the Japanese.
Well, the United States is, and
Britain
is as well. But the big European theater is concluded at this point.
But here's the point. Churchill was never held in such high esteem. He was a wartime prime minister, and that's the way everybody saw him. And then once the war was over, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, get out. On the same day that Churchill leaves office.
Oh,
man. Clement Attlee?
Clement Attlee.
Thank you. Wow, I got one right.
Little punk.
The same day that he leaves office, Churchill, the USS Indianapolis arrives at Tinian, Saipan and Tinian, but they arrive at Tinian.
Tinian, yeah.
And they are delivering.
In the Marianas.
Yes, they are delivering the parts of the warhead for the Hiroshima atomic bomb.
Yes.
Now,
Robert Shaw was on that trip.
Robert Shaw was on. Would you like to hear the speech?
I can
cue it up.
Oh, boy.
No?
Not necessarily.
No?
Give
you don't want to hear the.
Two.
700 men went into the sea that day. Now, this is after they've dropped off the parts.
Yes.
They're coming home, and the Indianapolis runs into a little problem.
That was the last day Robert Shaw wore a life vest.
Sharks got some of them.
Got the rest. I don't know. Most of them died exposure and stuff, apparently. The sharks got a few.
A few? And they got
a couple.
Not
that many.
I think they got dozens, dude.
You know,
what do you consider a few?
It's not a tragedy. Ask George Costanza, right?
How many die on a regular cruise?
How many die on a regular Navy boat?
That's a good question during the war.
That's your quote.
1947, Harry S. Truman. He gets busy on July 26th. And let me tell you.
We're still paying for
this really shapes the world we live in today. You can call it folly, Armand. I'll let the listeners decide what they think. But he signs what's called the National Security Act into law. And this creates the following. The CIA, the Department of Defense, the Air Force, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the National Security Council. Now,
yeah.
I love the Air Force. I still am fuzzy on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The Department of Defense.
Yeah, well, we already had a,
you had a Department
of Department
War.
Of Navy and you know, that kind
you've
of
just
War
renamed
Department
that.
Of Navy. That's all that
so
is.
The big two
the
here.
The big one is the last one, the NSC.
Is the NSC, the National Security Council.
Speaking of which, did you see Trump said no more transsexuals in the Army?
I saw that this morning. No
Good.
More transgender.
Good, of course. Doesn't that go without what?
Why?
It's right.
Okay. It's
no
right.
Transgender
you say
in
it's
the
right.
Army.
Okay. You say it's right.
Oh, you think we should have them?
I don't.
I'm asking your opinion.
If a citizen wants to fight for his country, let him fight for his country.
What if a quadriplegic wants to go in the Army?
Let him.
That's not what the Army's for. The Army's to kill people, okay?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
not
yeah.
good for morale.
The
it's
Army.
Not.
The
Army. Ask these
okay.
generals.
Okay. Hold on a second. If you're telling me a very intuitive person that has a disability cannot serve their country in a militaristic capacity.
No.
They can't be a logistics person.
No.
They can't be behind a desk. They can't be working with a computer. They can't be doing something in data processing, in analytics. Come on, Armand.
No, because if they're taking the place of an able-bodied man.
No, they're not taking the place.
Well, they are. Technically, they are.
How?
Because there's only so many spots in the Army now. Theoretically,
well, you know, theoretically, that's true. Right, right.
Okay.
The Army has a budget; they only have
right,
so many.
That's it.
Right.
So in fact, right now, if there's a siege like the Russian, that's always well. The Russians used women in the Army. Yeah, they were under siege and they had nobody else. Hitler's 6 miles
yeah.
outside Moscow.
Yeah, you got
to
do something.
If they're coming to Granite City, yeah, every transgender, please get in a foxhole with me.
Right.
But we're not in that situation.
Okay, I take your point, but I still say if you want to serve our country.
Serve some other way. Go to the post office.
Oh, there's all sorts of ways to.
They shouldn't be fighting.
They're not fighting, but they are supporting
they
troops
be
that
supporting
might
either.
Be. Oh gosh,
I don't know. I don't know if that's what the guy said anyway, though. Is that what it means?
I don't know.
See, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I'd have
I don't
to
know
look.
If, I thought
have
it
to
meant
look
combat.
Into the story.
I thought it can't be in combat.
Speaking of who can be in the Army and who can't. 1 year to the date, 1948, Truman signs Executive Order 9981, which desegregates the military of the United States.
This makes sense.
This makes sense.
Okay, this is fine.
But sort of by your logic here. If
no,
they,
these
if,
are able-bodied
hold
men.
Hold on,
my logic.
Were they taking away spots from able-bodied white men?
Well, that's different. That has nothing to do with it. This does have something to do with it. Although it could have been, probably was argued back then that you know,
sure
a white guy doesn't want to serve with a black guy.
I'm sure someone did argue it back then.
Right.
But again, if you want to serve your country, serve your country. It's okay.
Not in the Army. That's all I'm saying. There's a million ways to serve your country.
What about the Navy then?
Going to State Department.
What about? But the
whatever.
But today.
Not in combat. Not in combat.
I'm not saying
and
combat.
Not in combat
how
support.
How many times do I?
Not in combat support either. Not in the armed forces.
Wow.
That's it.
You
want to go.
Let's say you have a brilliant computer technician analyst.
All right, put him to work somewhere else.
You're not going to allow him to serve and support our armed forces because he has a disability?
Not a disability. I'm talking about transgender.
That makes no sense to me. I want the best of the best that I can get.
Well, I was talking about combat. But if you're talking about,
I'm not
talking about a paraplegic.
How many times do I have to qualify this that I'm not talking about combat?
All right, then, okay. Yeah, paraplegic, fine. Transgender? No.
Even in a support role?
Even a support role.
Oh, Armand. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Because they're working with people, and they live with people and things like that, and it's not good for morale. And it's been proven over and over. That's what the generals say, not me.
Okay. And I wouldn't know because I've not served in our armed forces. I've
been in ROTC, and it would have made me a little, you know, I spent a few weekends, you know, playing soldier.
Yeah.
It would have made me even then a little uneasy to know that
yeah.
The guy next to me or the woman next to me is a guy or vice versa.
I don't know that I would have given a damn.
Well,
you know what? When I was 18, I might have given a damn. That's the sad.
Well, that's what we're talking
about.
We're not talking about old farts like us.
Right. I was not enlightened.
I can't see it well enough now to tell the difference anyway. So it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Then when your vision's sharp, it makes a
you're
lot.
You're like the guy in the boat at the end of Some Like It Hot.
Yeah. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. All right. Halfway through the events, let's do the birthdays
Who
today.
Who do you want, Jack Lemmon or Marilyn Monroe?
I'll take Monroe.
Good choice. Okay. Well, you really got a problem if...
1739, George Clinton. Happy birthday, George. Not of the P-Funk All-Stars, but your fourth Vice President of the United States.
All right. Well, you only he and Calhoun, right? You know the deal.
Only
That's
he
why he's
Calhoun.
A trivia question answer. Only two vice presidents have done this. Served under two presidents.
Served under two presidents.
He served under Jefferson and Madison.
And Madison.
And Calhoun was...
Madison and Monroe?
No, I think
Jackson.
Jackson was one. Was it Monroe and Jack? No, no, it couldn't be. John Quincy Adams, I believe, and Jackson.
And Jackson. He was number six and seven.
Yeah.
And, okay. That's a good trivia question.
Yeah, only two.
1856, happy birthday, George Bernard Shaw. You got a favorite Shaw?
I like Devil's Disciple.
Yeah, that's based and I'm still going to watch
that's
that.
That's not one of his more popular plays.
No, I know. I
Arms
know.
And the Man's pretty good. St. Joan. Pygmalion, of course.
Of course.
Which he won, now here's another trivia. Only two men have won an Oscar and a Nobel Prize in literature.
Oh, gosh.
And a Nobel Prize. Only two men.
Is it Faulkner?
Who's the other one?
Faulkner? Because he's got
not in literature. The other Nobel Prize is not in literature.
Oh, it's not in literature.
An
oh,
Academy gosh. Award and a Nobel Prize.
I have no idea.
Of course you know. Who do I hate the most in this world?
Al Gore.
Thank you. That was easy.
That was so easy.
Yes, I gave you a big hint.
It came to me like a bolt of lightning.
Who, if you were in this room, would I kick right in the groin?
1875, happy birthday, Carl Jung, Swiss psychiatrist and psychotherapist. You a Jungian guy?
I don't study it. Okay. Adler, I guess, if I had to.
1892, happy birthday, Sad Sam Jones, my name of the day. Sad Sam Jones, American baseball player and manager.
I'm going to look so sad about
I'm going to look into that and see why he was so sad. 1894, Aldous Huxley.
Oh, now this guy's interesting to
me. He's fascinating. And as a teenager, I read Brave New World and was really enraptured by it.
Yeah, I'd like to read it again.
If you haven't read Brave New World, do yourself a favor. It will not take you long. It's not a huge opus.
We're getting close to that again.
But we're venturing into Brave New World territory.
It may not be fiction now, but...
And,
but you know, this guy has he's almost practically blind. Okay.
No kidding.
Yeah. And he did the Bates method, and I read the book. This guy, this doctor.
Wait a second. What's the Bates method?
That's what I'm saying. That Dr. Bates had this method of to cure nearsightedness without glasses. I actually tried it because I was nearsighted before I had my, my.
Do you have a laser surgery?
No, I had the knife.
Oh,
radiokeratotomy.
Radiokeratotomy. Okay.
And anyway, but I did some of these exercises, and it did help. The guy has certain exercises you do.
Strengthens the...
The ocular muscle. He believed that your nearsighted, and this has been disproven, but like I said, it helped me. Apparently, Huxley, thought it was a miracle. He had these certain ciliary muscle exercises for the guys, for people, and that supposedly helped your vision, and Huxley was a big... But of course, Huxley was, he was big into drugs. He liked to take certain flights of the imagination, and he was kind of some weird... some Southern California religion that was like a precursor.
Imagine if he had met Timothy Leary earlier in life.
Yeah, he was like one of them.
Imagine if the CIA had gotten a hold of him and given him some LSD.
You know, he hung out at Occidental College.
No kidding.
Yeah, Eagle Rock. My office was right next to that.
Wow. Well, he died in 63. Yeah. So he almost made it to that real.
Yeah, he would have loved the 60s.
Oh, he would have loved the full-on 60s,
He was making $3,000 a year as a screenwriter. $3,000 a week. $3,000 a week.
Not bad. Especially in those days. Holy smoke. Not bad at all.
Oh, and, you saw he died. You should know the day he died. We've gone over this.
I don't remember.
He died on 11/22/63.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was kind of a...
That's right. The day Kennedy died, two other famous people died.
C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis and Huxley.
Correct. That's how you remember the day he died.
That is...
Nobody else remembers.
11/22/63. Damn. That's good, Armand. Another great trivia question from you. 1895, this little lady here was born. You got to be a little older to know her, but boy.
A lot older.
She was famous. Let's see here.
Good night.
Yes.
Say good night.
Good night.
That's it.
I want to say good night, Grace.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Say good night.
Thank you. Good night.
How about saying good night?
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
I thought he was supposed to say goodnight, Gracie, and she says goodnight, Gracie.
I think
I thought that was
that's not really how they did it in
the early... Dan and Dick? I don't know. Was that Ronan Martin?
No, that's Burns and Allen.
I do know she said, my name's Grace, but they call me Gracie for short. That's what she said that a bunch of times. That was funny, which obviously you giggled
what
at
a
it.
Neat lady. She seems like she could play today. You know, because like Betty White still plays
funny
today.
Show, man. Like, I think it's on YouTube.
I think Gracie would still play today.
Oh yeah.
1920. So
I don't
Gracie.
It's kind of sexist though, because she's the original.
Dumb blonde,
idiot.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. And people get. Have you noticed though a disturbing trend?
Let's see. I don't know.
You watch commercials.
Yes.
The guy is always an idiot.
Oh, hold on, Armand. We can talk about this forever. You know why?
Do you agree with this?
Well, it's the Homer Simpson of Homer Simpsonization. Of the American male. It's been going on since the 1980s.
I don't know what you call it, but man,
well, that's
sick
what it is.
Shit.
Go to every sitcom and the punchline of almost all the jokes is the white dad.
Well, I mean, I was watching The Honeymooners the other day, and you know Ralph's always got some stupid hair-grained scheme.
Yeah.
And Alice is actually the one that's the thoughtful.
Absolutely.
You know.
And it may have started as.
I wasn't offended by that, but I'm really offended when, you know, I watch these. Every commercial, the guy's a dope.
Yes.
And the wife says, hey, stupid ass.
Yes.
What is this?
It's the Homer Simpsonization.
Well,
and that's
what
where
I'm saying,
that,
I don't know
that's
if
where
that's,
the, but to see, that's where Homer came from. The writers, all those writers of The Simpsons recognized this happening throughout the culture in the 1980s, where the white guy dad is the doof of the situation in a lot of instances. Because who do you make fun of? Well, you make fun of the guy on top, the white American male.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's see that.
But all of a sudden they start to equate the white American male with just being stupid.
Right.
Well, but go on from plenty of sitcoms over the years have embraced this tactic. The worst of which is like King of Queens, Everyone Loves Raymond, shows like
that. Were those guys stupid?
No, they're not stupid, but they get portrayed as dumb by the ones around them.
I'll think about it.
There's a lot to dig into there. You are not off base.
I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, like I said, Ralph Cramden, you know.
Yeah.
Alice is always the one that's like, she's the thoughtful one.
Right. But
keeping
that,
him from wasting his money on
dumb
things.
Ralph is just the dreamer. Again, that's the Walter Mitty type of thing.
He's not the,
but
these people are just stupid.
Right. Now Norton.
Yeah, Norton.
Norton's dumb.
Yeah.
Rolfie boy.
Right. Yeah.
Can you address the, Norton, address the golf ball.
Hello, Bull.
You're Eddie Murphy. Tucker.
Norton.
Yeah, come over here and fuck me.
Norton, yeah. I know that you know that I know that you know.
Yeah, if these guys are gay.
Oh, my
that is
God.
Funny.
That bit in, I think that's Delirious.
Is that what it is?
I think it's the first one.
Yeah,
he's in the
funny.
Red jumpsuit.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That red leather Woo! Thing he's wearing.
Wow.
What happened to him? He's kind of flamed out,
He's toned it down. Come on, he got...
Did you ever see Pluto Nash? That's supposed to be like the worst thing ever
horrible.
Made.
It's
really?
Horrible.
Do we have that?
No, you don't.
Gotta talk to
don't,
Eva.
Don't even do it to yourself.
Really, it's not that bad.
Don't
funny.
Do it to yourself. Don't do it to yourself.
Either that or Battlefield Earth. That'd be a great double feature.
Well, he was also in Best Defense, I think, with Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
See,
is
he
that
got
bad.
They threw a bunch of things where. Oh God.
I'm gonna try to cash in on it.
They tried. Yeah. 1922. Happy birthday, Blake Edwards. I don't get Blake Edwards.
Well,
I don't
like
get
the Pink Panther.
I do, but why was his name? Why did his name have to be on everything? Blake Edwards presents. Blake Edwards this. Blake Edwards romantic whatever.
Now he's married to Julie Andrews, right?
Yeah. What the hell do I care?
Well, I'm just trivia.
Who the hell is this guy that he's so damn funny? His name should be on the title.
He did
of everything.
One serious one though. I'm trying to think of which one he did that was really serious. I mean, I may hear again. He produced it or something. I don't know if he may have even directed it, but he did one I really like. I'm trying to think that I was like, what the hell?
No.
Oh, Days of Wine and Roses.
That's good.
It's a great movie.
I
was surprised he was directed. He directed that.
No, look,
that's
he's not
as serious
without,
as it
he's
gets.
Not without talent. But when you go to a film, is it Steven Spielberg's E.T.? No, it's E.T. directed by Steven Spielberg.
Anyway,
all right.
See Days of Wine and Roses, man.
Yeah,
that is probably my Jack Lemmon. Man, that was an amazing performance.
How about this next guy? Happy birthday to one of my favorite actors. And I'm serious, Armand. I love this guy. I loved him as a kid. And this, I'm going to play you my favorite scene of all time from Jason Robards. And you're going to love it.
Oh.
Can you guess where it's coming from?
Better not be All the President's Men.
It is. It is. But hold on. Listen to what he has to say during this scene. He is portraying, of course, Ben Bradley, editor-in-chief, Washington Post.
Hold it. grand jury. The FBI confirms. What more do you need?
Well, I happen to love this country. You know, we're not a bunch of zanies out to bring it down.
Harry, weren't you arguing the opposite way?
No, not at all.
Hold it. We're about to accuse Haldeman, who only happens to be the second most important man in this country, of conducting a criminal conspiracy from inside the White House. It would be nice if we were right.
You double-checked your sources.
Jesus.
Bernstein, are you sure on this story?
Absolutely.
Woodward?
I'm sure.
I'm not.
That's everything you need to know about being an editor right there. You got your two guys telling you it's good to go, and your gut tells you, no.
Yeah. You think the editors of the Washington Post are like that now?
I'm not saying.
I got a story about Trump pissing on Obama's bed.
Stop.
Put it in there, man.
Stop.
Well, what do you mean stop?
Stop.
Isn't that terrible?
Well, have they done that? Have they ran that?
You think? Oh, they did.
They ran a story about Trump pissing on his bed.
Right.
Did they?
It's in there. Where do you think I got it? Yeah, I made that up. Remember the golden shower in Obama's bed or whatever at the Trump Plaza, wherever we stand?
I think you got that way off.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. You think these people check like that anymore? As long as it's against Trump, they're going to print it.
When that story came out, I did tell my friends, Ben Bradley would have said, get another source.
Thanks.
I did. That was an actual quote from me. The socialist.
We're all mourning the death of these great
the
editors.
Socialist pig.
And I wouldn't
but
doubt.
But Robarbs,
and
man.
Believe me, I wouldn't doubt that somebody at the Washington Times heard something about Hillary and said, print it.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So I'm being both.
Again.
But we're mourning the death of the editor.
You're mourning
this character.
A conversation like that. That was portrayed in a film in 1976 about an event that happened in 1972-73.
Yeah, but the question here is also, though, you know, he did preface it by saying we're talking about the second most powerful man in the United States.
Yes, it'd be nice
if
we were right.
Stark fear? It could have been fear.
You're
ascribing a certain nobility that we got to get this story straight. Well, yeah, you're going to be crucified if you don't.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't know if it's journalistic honesty that's being preached here.
Oh, I think it is.
Well, I think
Robarb's portrayal of that character, Ben Bradley, in that movie is so strong.
Now, he won the Academy Award for that.
That about 90% of Americans who even know who Ben Bradley is, when you say the name Ben Bradley, Robarb's face flashes into your mind.
Now,
that's how strong a role I thought he nailed it in that movie.
Well, I always liked him as Al Capone in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre myself, which goes to show we just don't have good underworld kingpins like Al. Either.
I also liked him in this film called Parenthood, late 80s.
Oh yeah,
had a really good cast.
Maybe a father or something.
He was the patriarch of the family. And
now he's the only man to do what?
Robarbs? Huh? I don't know.
Won two consecutive supporting actor Academy Awards. No other one's won two supporting actor or actress.
Back to back.
Right.
Hanks has done it and someone else has done
those
it
are
on,
actor,
on the acting side. Yeah, on the actor.
Well, Brennan won three supporting actors,
right.
But not in a row. Well, what's the other movie?
Oh,
I just named
damn.
All the President's Men.
I don't know.
Julia.
1977. 77,
yeah.
Huh? Okay. Right. All right. Also, happy birthday.
I think he played Dashiell Hammett.
Oh, cool. Happy birthday.
That was about Lillian Hellman.
To this guy. The greatest.
Yeah, but he faked the moon landing.
How great could he be? That's why he's the greatest. Oh, you got to love that, Armand. 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Well, that's
Stanley Kubrick, happy birthday.
Well, that's actually Richard Strauss.
I know who it is.
Thus spake Zarathustra.
I know who it is.
Yeah, so, I mean.
But Kubrick used it to great effect.
I like Paths of Glory, so that's my favorite Kubrick.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
If you had to rank the films, could you?
Well, I just did. Number one,
Paths of Glory. So is that
57? I like The Killing.
That's also from the 50s,
56.
Isn't it?
56.
You're gonna have those two ahead of Strangelove, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, I guess Strangelove's probably. I'll take Strangelove second. I like Paths of Glory first.
I just watched Strangelove last night. It came on late, so I had to stay up. God, they should have gave Slim Pickens some type of Academy Award for that. They really should have.
Felt like we had a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that.
All
stuff.
That. Joe Jackson. Happy birthday, Joe, the patriarch of the Jackson family.
He's kind of a nutcase, right?
He's not a nice man.
Okay.
1943, the birth of Mick Jagger.
He's not a good-looking man.
But no, and he knows it. But he's played it really well.
What a face that guy's got.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
Just
to get that
show,
kind of mileage.
It doesn't take
there,
a lot.
There wasn't a good-looking guy in the group. They really were.
They had to be the ugliest band of all time. Man, I'll tell you. But
I once when was this? This might have been 20 years ago, Armand. Show at Chicago, the United Center.
Yeah.
We went up for a show. They were doing, I don't know, some, you know, greatest hits type tour, right? And I'm walking by one of these things, you know, where they sell all the T-shirts, and they had this poster. I'm like, damn, that's a really good poster. But, you know, I go, hey, I want the poster. He goes, well, which one? I said, the ugly one. And without flinching an eye, the guy knew exactly what I wanted, and he grabbed the exact right poster.
Yeah, well, it wasn't Jim Morrison.
And I have that ugly poster today framed, and they look like hell.
Oh, what a face.
I mean,
anyway, good voice, I guess. I'm not a big Stone. I never was.
You got a favorite song, though? Because you got to admit, they got on a roll.
What is it, 200 light years from
you
home?
Like that?
Yeah.
2,000 light years from home. That's from Satanic Majesty's Request.
Yeah, that's my favorite Stone song.
Really?
Yeah. It has an eerie quality.
More than Gimme Shelter and Sympathy for the Devil?
You asked, I just told you.
All right. Mine has always been Gimme Shelter.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Under My Thumb's pretty good, too.
You can't go wrong.
I like the
man.
Lyrics, yeah.
Now, here's one that kind of astounds me. Mick Jagger is older than Helen Mirren by 2 years, who was born on this date in 1945.
Yeah.
And I suggested that you go watch a couple specific films to
Caligula.
See a young Helen Mirren, and I'm wondering if you have yet.
Yeah, several times.
Okay.
Well, kind of. I watched them, you know, bits and pieces. Then I had to go to the bathroom.
Oh, did you? Okay. 1959, happy birthday, Kevin Spacey. I loved him in American Beauty.
Actually, Jack Lemmon's the guy that really inspired him to.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it was like his
You know
mentor.
What Kevin Spacey's really good at? This. Hold on.
Jimmy Stewart. And Mr. Stewart, generations of actors have admired your naturalism and your simplicity. Now, is that just Jimmy Stewart, or is it Jimmy Stewart playing a kind of Jimmy Stewart?
Well, not Jimmy, I know what you're saying.
How about that?
I'm aware of what you're trying to say. Yeah. And the answer is yes.
He's no Rich Little, but it's not bad.
Oh, I think he's better than Rich Little.
What?
Yes.
Oh, come on.
Hold on. I'm going to get to the Jack Lemmon here, buddy.
You can all testify now to the fact that I have interviewed Jimmy Stewart.
That James Lipton, though. What a blowhard.
Here I am.
He's
this is a
presumptuous
kind
fool.
Of interview show, a talk show. And Johnny, you reign.
All right,
for
let's
years
see what do you think about his Carson.
Okay. Of talk show hosts.
Well, now we're talking.
Well, that's better. That's pretty good.
What was the secret of your success?
You know, Jimmy, I'd love to answer that, but I don't work on Mondays.
That's, you know, that's better. I think
okay.
that's better.
All right.
There's more?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Spacey's amazing at these.
Now, I understand that you have conducted a long correspondence with Kevin Spacey, and that he approached you once, Miss Hepburn.
You're going to like this. You're going
to
like this.
I would like to know whether what's that story? Have you actually corresponded? What do you write?
He is a stalker. He just won't leave me alone.
Well, when he writes to you, what do you respond?
He writes letters, goes on and on about himself, and I just say, good for you.
All right, enough.
Come on.
Not more?
Yeah, one more. Let's see what it is. He's got Jack Lemmon in here somewhere.
I would like to ask you, please, because you are a very good director, as well as a wonderful actor, Mr. Eastwood. How did you acquire it? Could it by any chance have been a result of your training at the Actors Studio?
Listen, I didn't learn tiddly twat at the Actors Studio.
That's Ms. Brando.
That's Brando?
Well, you know.
There's his walking. Oh.
He's just stoned, you know. You gotta forgive him, you know. He's crazy that way.
That's a damn right. Good walk.
And he's got a good toupee, too. By...
Here comes his Pacino.
By Kevin Spacey on Saturday Night Live. We all said, saw that. How did you feel about it? Were you pleased?
Oh, funny. No.
I know that, like, so many of
you know who does a good Al Pacino is Nick.
Who?
No kidding.
Oh man, he's funny.
Here on this stage with us, Kevin Spacey often looks to you, Jack Lemmon, for professional wisdom. What is your final word tonight? What is your advice to our young students?
I wish to hell he'd stop calling me. Leave me the f*** alone.
You got to admit, all right. Come on, Armand.
He's a good actor. I don't know. His,
you got to give it up. Sandra Bullock.
Got, he's got a Best Supporting and Best Actor.
Happy birthday, Sandy, 1964.
Now, we got to listen to her imitate Mae West.
No, one for The Blind Side. And Jeremy Piven. You would love this guy. Ari Gold from Entourage. Him, little Ari Gold, Armand? Mm-hmm. Little Ari Gold?
Guy doesn't want to make money. He's a communist. You communist or are you a socialist? Or didn't they teach you the difference of pepperoni you?
It's pretty urgent that in the 15 minutes a day I have free, I take the time to keep this body fit. And not just so you have a great ass to look at, I want to live.
No, no, we said Starbucks, Eric. I distinctly remember because I fucked the counter girl here.
That's Jeremy Piven, okay.
You come on, Ari Gold, that's who you aspire to be.
I don't know about that.
And 1967, Jason Statham.
I never did buy this guy as a badass. I don't know where that comes from, but I guess he's okay. Although he was really good.
He was really good in Snatch.
I didn't see. What's that? Is that the one with Goldie Hawn?
No, that's Guy Ritchie.
Oh.
Guy Ritchie, it's got every good English actor in it ever.
I'm thinking
and
of one.
And they're putting on a boxing match, and Brad Pitt plays a pikey, one of those English gypsies that just,
nah,
you know.
That's not the one I'm thinking. I'm thinking of the one.
Transporter?
No. I mean, those all suck. But the fat gal, McCarthy or whatever, is a secret agent.
Oh, spy.
Okay, but he's the real secret.
Yeah, he's the real
agent. He's funny. He's got like two scenes that are both hilarious. When he's trying to be funny, because he's like, you know, caricature of himself. And I thought those were, that whole movie, I didn't laugh once. And then he got on there, I cracked up.
You're a hard man to please, dude.
It's funny. I laugh. I'm telling you, that movie sucked, but he was great.
All right, back to the events of the day. Happening on July 26th throughout time. And here we go, 1951.
Are we done with these Expendables, or are they going to make more of them?
Oh, they'll probably make more. If someone's buying them, they'll probably make more.
I heard, did you see Dolph Lundgren's going to be in the new Creed?
Yeah, I love it. Do you know Dolph Lundgren is a Brighton scholar?
He doesn't look like a dope to me. He plays one.
Highly intelligent guy. Yeah. Highly intelligent. It's like
pretty good.
I think it's called a Brighton scholar. It's the opposite of whatever. It's the opposite of a Rhodes scholar.
Oh, okay. So they brought their guys
over
here?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, stay where
but
the
hell his you turn are. Is Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
But for me, I can't even do it. So damn good. He yells at the Gorbachev looking guy in Rocky IV.
Yeah. I must break you.
What did he say? What are you?
I think you got it right.
I think he just mumbled as usual.
1951, July 26th. Walt Disney releases his 13th animated film, Alice in Wonderland, premiering it in London.
I've never seen it.
I got to tell you, Alice in Wonderland, the whole thing trips me out. I don't like it. I don't care for it. I don't care for it one bit.
I've never seen it.
I think the whole thing's weird. The Mad Hatter, the weird 10/6 thing on his hat.
I never liked the book. So
the whole thing, I think, is a drug-fueled
I think Alice is a lesbian. Although I did, I think that's the first porn movie I ever saw.
Allison.
Yeah, the one they
Jesus.
Made. Yeah, I saw it at the drive-in when I snuck in the trunk. Yeah.
What drive-in showed these?
The Falcon. God. Remember the Falcon?
No.
Out in Cahokia?
No, I can see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Over the dead Indian ground. And they tear it down for stupid archaeological to find dead Indians. Fuck that. Jeez. See, government run amok again.
Oh.
Nice porn drive-in.
Yeah, then it's gone.
Yeah.
Because someone had to revise history.
These ridiculous pursuits. So some historian could, yeah. Revisionist 19, history.
1953, Fidel Castro tries to lead an attack. He was unsuccessful. He tried to attack the Moncada barracks, but this begins the Cuban Revolution, and the movement would then take the name the 26th of July Movement.
Yeah,
that's why you have that.
Right.
All right. Same day, 1953.
My buddy's father went to law school with him. Said that's amazing.
With who? Castro.
Castro. Yes. Yeah, so that was the. He's never forgiven himself for not killing that son of a bitch.
Did he know at the time?
He was preaching all this shit. He was preaching. You know, they all thought he was a nut.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah. Even in law school, I'm going to take over the country. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, he's the guy everyone laughs at in class.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm going to take over this country.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I may have just jinxed us all, folks. I laughed at Armand. Now he'll go and do it.
That'd be a great ticket, man.
1953. The governor of Arizona, a man by the name of John Howard Pyle, he orders an anti-polygamy law enforcement crackdown on residents of Short Creek, Arizona, which becomes known as the Short Creek Raid.
What the hell's going on over there?
Yeah, I got a lot of questions about this. How in the world do you know if you're a... Let's say, Armand, you're living with four women. How in the world do we know that you're practicing polygamy?
Your mouth to God's ears.
How do we
Make
know?
It six.
How do we have any idea that you're practicing polygamy?
I didn't read up on this. I've never heard of it. I didn't have a problem with it, to tell you the truth.
Well, how do you enforce it?
I don't know.
I mean, now if you go in for
a crackdown, somebody goes to jail, I guess. A bunch of different
marriages.
How does the government crack down on anything? You either go to jail, or you get fined, or you get your van taken away.
Well, is there possessions they want? Yeah. Are they taking the wives?
Yeah, that's what I do.
I mean, look, I'm not for polygamy. I'm not for polygamy, but I don't know how you stop it.
I'm not for the government telling people who they can marry. I really don't have a big problem with polygamy.
You want to hear my long-winded?
How can you have a law that says you can marry a man or two men can get married and you can't have three wives? It doesn't make sense to me.
How do you let me
or three husbands?
Let me take it one step further because I'm not
which is polyandry.
I'm not
of course
anti-gay marriage
I'm
at
not
all
either.
Okay. How can you have a law or give benefits for public declarations of romantic entanglement?
Explain.
You have to publicly state through a marriage contract that you love this person.
Where'd that come from?
Well, that's basically what a marriage implies, right? You love each other, you're going to live together.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
It's more of a contract,
but
right?
It is.
Kind of a legal binding contract.
But why is it even associated with romantic entanglement?
Well, it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. Right. So, for instance, if you and your cousin, the Ocho Man, wanted to make household together.
Cohabitate. One of us would be dead within a week.
Why should that be associated with romantic entanglement? If you're going to establish a household together, why can't you two live together for however many number of years under a contract? And you have, you know, I don't know, medical power of attorney
well, that's
over
what I'm
him.
Saying. What legal?
And you have all the legal benefits of a regular married couple,
I get
regardless.
His insurance too.
Yes.
Oh boy. Well, now we're coming into some.
What's to stop that? Why is that stopped?
Well, I think it should be stopped.
Why? Because you're not romantically entangled?
Because I don't like people getting benefits because they're married on anything.
Okay, then at least you are consistent, even though I would disagree with
like
you.
Like, if you work for me, I don't want to give your wife benefits. That's my, you know, but.
Okay, but at least you're consistent on that.
Yeah.
What is inconsistent is saying, no, you two get it because you're sleeping together. You two don't because... Well, just because.
Well, here's the thing to me. I'm not for the sanctity of marriage. Don't get me wrong. But to me, marriage has always been a religious, not a legal. You know.
But it's both. That's why you can get married in a church, but you have to sign a contract.
Okay.
Or you can go to the courthouse and simply sign the contract.
Yeah, but why can I get a marriage annulled if it's never been consummated?
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Answer me that, Riddler.
Yeah.
Mr. Enigma.
Yeah.
Because if you can prove it's never been consummated, that marriage can be annulled, correct? Right. I'm not a lawyer. We'll talk to Coop or Scott about it.
The church will annul it for you on that one.
But I'm talking about legally, too, right?
Well, legally, that's a different matter. I don't know.
I think it is. It's as legal.
So, again,
if you never, because that's, isn't that
we're
how
discriminating
they,
against people who can't find romantic entanglement? That seems odd to me.
Well, I don't know. It's all the benefits in thereof. I don't know.
Would you not like to live with someone and have their health insurance cover you?
Sure.
Sure you
would. I'd like to not live with somebody and have their even more.
Well, yeah, but you're making household. So you're both contributing to a house.
So what's the cohabitation bullshit about that?
Well,
let's go to ad absurdum.
That's another factor.
Yeah.
You can take it to the next
one.
Why do we have to? Because married people don't even have to live together.
Yeah.
You can have separate residences.
Absolutely. I'll take that deal.
Interesting argument.
I don't know.
Interesting argument. 1971, the Apollo program. Oh, I wish I... This is the one I wanted to be on, Armand. Apollo 15. This is a J mission.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. But it sounds
bring
cool.
Bring it up.
This is the first time they bring along the U-Haul and they unpack the lunar rover.
Oh, yeah. I guess they left that on there.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. It's still up there. Yeah. The LRV and... there would be nothing better
than
to get to the moon and drive around
on a little
buggy.
Yeah, right.
Which to me is
the bunch of lazy bastards, man.
Ever
walk? We got to take a buggy for
we're gonna. Well, they had to go further. They wanted to go further.
Yeah, you want a caddy for your 6-iron too?
Awesome. Can you imagine?
Should have smuggled a caddy.
I went all
there.
The way to the moon to ride on a glorified go-kart. That's so good.
Yeah.
That is so me on so many levels, too. Oh, what I wouldn't give to drive around on the moon.
I was reading an article.
I'd love it.
They were talking about the biggest problem to living on Mars, apparently, that nobody discusses. It's because Martian G is only like 0.38 of the Earth.
Oh, okay.
And that's going to fuck up your reproductive. No, they're saying that like mice can't reproduce in space, and they don't think people are going to be able to reproduce for some reason. Because, yes, apparently gravity, you know.
Gravity what?
Gravity is necessary for your reproductive system. A lot of your systems, but that one's affected.
Wow.
So they just can't get mice to reproduce on the space station, and they think that's what's going to happen on Mars, too.
Is something happening to the sperm or the egg or what's...
You would think it could be easier to swim, but...
What's going on?
I don't know.
Yes.
You got less resistance.
Less
to
resistance,
get up.
Right?
Yeah, I bet I get a hell of a hard on Mars, huh?
You'd probably pass out like... Milton Berle.
Johnny Holmes.
He'd fly away. Good grief. 1977. Another one I love, Armand. You're going to love this one, too. Quebec, the National Assembly. They declare in 1977 the official language of the government is French.
Sure.
Just a big to the rest of Canada.
Speaking of George Bernard Shaw.
You got to love that.
You know the thing that guy, he was a crusader about spelling.
Good.
Yeah, he wanted to take the U out of honor, the British, and, spell things the way they're phonetically.
I like it.
Yeah.
His
whole life was to that.
I don't
and
need.
In fact, I think he invented an alphabet.
I don't need color, C-O-L-O-U-R, and I don't need theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
Well, there's a difference between theater and theater.
Oh, really?
T-E-R. Yeah, that's implied.
Oh, what is it?
Well, I believe theater, T-R-E, is the actual, theater. I love theater.
Oh, meaning?
Whereas theater is, I'm going to the theater.
Meaning a physical location versus...
Right, the art.
Veer versus the art.
Theater.
Ah.
So there's actually a difference between
those
two words.
I'll accept that. Yeah. That's
not an Anglicism.
What about this? Center and center.
Yeah, well, that's one's British.
T-R-E? T-E-R.
But he was talking about like rough, G-H having... Remember they had that one word?
Need just a silent G in there?
Well, that G-H could be...
Eddie Izzard does a whole bit on this very thing.
Well, he had the thing that was like, I can spell fish 50 different ways or whatever.
Sure.
Because it's like the pronunciation of the letters, like there's a silent T and...
Yeah.
Ptomaine, a silent P, pneumonia.
Silent.
Yeah, all this stuff. That's what you want to get rid of.
We just need a very
G-H is an F.
Soft G H.
Yeah, so he invented his own alphabet.
Good for him. I love anyone that takes that kind of initiative. I'll get behind you.
All right. Yeah, but that's when he was still a Fabian socialist. So
yeah,
we gotta hate that.
Look, you gotta take the good with the bad, right? Yeah. You want an alphabet, you get a little socialism with
Cute
it.
Beard.
You can live with it, Armand.
What was it? Wasn't it? I was gonna say there's a story about. Was it him and the? Didn't he run into somebody on a bicycle? Have you ever heard that
George
story?
George Bernard Shaw?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I got to look that up. Go ahead.
Look it up.
Something funny about that.
So the Quebecers, what do you say, what do you call a Quebec person? A Quebecie? Quebec
French. Quebecois?
Quebec.
Ooh la la.
I like it, though. Hey, Canada, good luck trying to figure out what we're doing, because we're doing it in French. Can you imagine if California declared, hey, guess what? The state language is Spanish.
It will be.
The rest of the country would have a baby with a bonnet on it.
Well, now, what do you think about having English as a national language?
I like it, and I think we should have Spanish as a secondary language. What's wrong with our country being bi or trilingual?
Oh, here we go.
Anything? Is anything wrong with that?
I don't know.
Wouldn't
like,
it better
like
serve
it.
Us to know a couple languages? Wouldn't it really better serve us?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I'm not sure it would.
I don't know why you'd be resistant to it. You want them to stop teaching Spanish in school?
Well, they teach German in school, too. I took French.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I took Latin, too.
Well,
but the problem is,
I'd rather everyone take Latin to start with. Honest
if you're
to
bilingual.
God, I'd rather everyone take Latin so you'd have a head start on all your romance languages.
What are you going to do? Are you going to talk to, okay, so you're going to teach in two languages then?
No. Teaching should be in English.
Well, then
okay. But other, look, I mean, there's businesses in America. Contracts are in Spanish. They're going to be in Spanish. It'd really help you if you knew Spanish. Because all the contracts I deal with, we always have to state the English version of the contract is the superseding version.
Well, then, if you're telling me that, we have de facto bilingualism.
To a degree.
This is a change. Oh, a calamitous encounter between George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell. And
on a bicycle?
Yeah, get a load of this. Brown chronicles the unusual encounter, which took place in September of 1895, while the two then young men were visiting socialists, of course, Sidney and Beatrice Webb at their house in Monmouthshire. Okay, listen to this. Monmouthshire. Though age 29, he is still learning to ride a bicycle and is doing so with a recklessness at odds with his usual physical timidity. I'm assuming that's Shaw. He regularly falls off at corners simply because no one has satisfactorily convinced him of the need to lean into them. Faced with a steep downhill slope, he places his feet on the handlebars.
Oh, jeez.
And
he raises the center of gravity.
Unable to steady himself when he hits a bump. Whenever he falls off his bicycle, which is often, he never admits to a mistake, behaving as though it has been his intention. Quote, many of his falls from which, this is long.
Yeah, come on, Armand, you get me about audio, now you're reading something completely boring.
What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, I'm going on. That's what I'm doing. So, in 1989... a federal grand jury indicts a Cornell student named Robert Morris for releasing the Morris worm. You know what this is, Armand?
Oh, he fell off the bike. Oh, he ran into Bertrand Russell.
Yes.
Busted his head open and he had to have surgery.
See? Don't put your feet on the handlebars,
black
kids.
Black eyes, violet lips, and a red face.
So the Morris worm gets released. You know what this is? The worm?
Well, I don't know.
It's the first basic computer prosecution. It violates the 1986 computer fraud and abuse case, and he is the first person, Robert Morris, prosecuted for doing something, malevolent, right? Out there in the sci-fi world. And in 2016, your first female nominee for president by a major political party as the president, not as on the ticket.
Right.
Becomes,
that would have been, of course.
Becomes Hillary
Geraldine.
Clinton. The first one on the ticket is 1984's Geraldine Ferraro.
Ferraro, yeah.
Second one was Palin in 2008. And your third
they're
one.
0 for 3.
On a ticket. Yes. Well, they are. Yeah. 0 for 3 with tickets with females.
I
actually never thought about it until right now. You're right. Two Democrats and one Republican. So it's not even a partisan thing. It's gone both ways. What do you mean the hell it isn't?
It's very partisan.
Really?
Everything's partisan.
Oh, okay. So they didn't run Sarah Palin on a Republican ticket in 2008. They didn't run Sarah Palin on a Republican ticket in 2008.
Yeah.
They didn't. They did. Of course they did. Right. So the fact that every female ticket
I'm
so far has lost
there was something
is
about
not
that
partisan.
Bicycle wreck that I thought was...
Well, you strive for exactitude. You come back to that tomorrow. Who died on this date as we wrap things up? July 26 has a couple notable deaths. Sam Houston, 7th governor of Texas, and of course, man that Houston, Texas is named after.
Yeah, man.
Died in 1863.
They got a good ball team.
They do. Well, this year's edition of the Astros are dynamite.
I don't even know. Who the hell they have that's so good? I don't even follow.
Carlos Correa.
All right.
Jose Altuve. Good pitching. A couple changes to the ballpark. They took away that weird center field ramp thing.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it's gone. It's still a hitter's park, though. 1926, Robert Todd Lincoln passes away, the son of Abraham. He was also the 35th Secretary of War. Do you know that there are no living descendants of Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah.
Today.
I know that.
Robert Todd's grandson passed away.
Well, none of George Washington either.
He never had any. But of course, Jefferson's descendants, hell, you could be walking down the street and pass one, not even knowing. They may not even know.
Who?
Jefferson's descendants.
Oh. That's a myth.
No, it's not. There could be hundreds of thousands
anyway,
of them.
Anyway, this guy, he refused to go to any more functions with the president after like three of them got killed. And he wasn't his father's, but he was there when Garfield got it, and he was there when McKinley got
it,
too.
Yes. No, he was not at the Ford Theater the night that his father was killed.
Yeah.
Nor was Willie.
Willie Lincoln?
Yeah, the youngest one.
Yeah.
He was at a different theater that night.
This is the only one that reached maturity though. He died young too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no living descendants of the Lincoln Todd Union.
Yep.
William Jennings Bryant died in 1925 on this date, the 41st Secretary of State. 1932, Fred Duesenberg passes away, the co-founder of the Duesenberg, which of course gives the great American term, it's a doozy.
Oh, okay.
That's where it comes from, all Armand.
Right.
It's
good car,
a doozy.
Yeah.
1952, Eva Perón.
Yeah, Evita.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah, she ran for vice president, but she got sick. She probably would have won.
25th First Lady of Argentina.
Yeah, pretty good looking dish.
Yeah, not bad. Oh, no.
They didn't like her marrying her because she's illegitimate, came from dirt poor.
The
woman of the people.
Yes, rags.
Better looking than Isabel, though.
I was in, last time I was in Buenos Aires going down, I think it's Avenida de Julio 9th. Whatever 9 is in Spanish. Oh. What is 9 in Spanish, Armand?
I know. Ocho's 8.
Ocho.
Okay. That's as far as I got.
The Avenue of July 9th, okay. I think, is the name of the avenue. And boy, right there on the side of the building, huge Eva Perón mural.
Oh, yeah. She's still highly revered.
And you, man, I'm like, wow, am I in Buenos Aires now?
You like that musical?
No.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Never liked it. 1971, you know this gal, Diane Arbus, American photographer and academic. Nope.
I know her, a photographer, right?
Yeah. No.
She's married to Alan Arbus.
Yeah, that's right.
The guy that played Sidney on MASH.
On MASH.
Yeah, that's her husband.
And I just watched the episode of MASH, the one where Sidney and Colonel Flagg wind up in the same tent, which I think is the only time they're together during the whole series.
Oh, the one we're playing poker?
It's the poker. It's the conference.
Yes, the conference. Yeah, get back to the conference. They need your money. John Ritter's in that one, too.
Yes, he is. He is the
crazy
PTSD soldier
that
Frank Burns wants to send back to
the
front.
Right.
It's one of Ritter's earliest screen appearances.
That's one of their best. And also, Pat Morita's in there, too.
He is in the conference.
He's playing poker.
Sits next to Sidney.
Right.
Yeah. And in 1984, George Gallup, the great mathematician and statistician, the founder of the Gallup Company, passes away.
Enough of these fucking polls, huh?
Oh, stop.
Aren't they the stupidest thing in the world?
Nothing wrong with a poll. Just don't.
Yeah. They're just dumb.
Well, just don't buy that.
Why even have them? What are they supposed to do?
Don't buy it. It's just supposed to give you an indicator. It's not gospel. That's what no one understands about polls.
I'm not even talking about whether it's accurate or not. Who cares?
Well, a couple things.
Public opinion be damned.
A couple things, Armand. If you want to know the public opinion, have a poll. If you want to know the opinion, realize that the sample size is very small, and you better read what the standard deviations are on these polls.
Well, then how do you explain the election?
Here's how. And Kelly and
that's a P. The P value.
Hold on. Kellyanne Conway accurately explained this. For all the bullshit that this lady's peddled, she got this one dead right.
Oh, God. That's high
praise. She said, look, I know what the polls say. I also know that we are inside the standard deviation of these polls. So there's a chance, and our own internal polling is showing something different. Now, of course, their polling is going to be a little more
that's the whole point. You
jaundiced.
Can make the poll say anything you want.
You can, depending on your sample.
Of course.
Yes, of course you can.
That's why they're worthless. if you ask me.
But you have to be that. That's up to you to distill.
And I don't like ruling by poll either, or governing by poll.
Let me tell you, that's the one exception to the Clinton administration I will always bring up. The old wet your finger, stick it in the air.
Yeah. What does a poll say?
Before we decide on something. No, it's a representative democracy. You were elected to lead. So lead.
Right. Well, I'm going to.
Don't continually. I think they took more polls during that administration.
Probably.
Than any other in the history.
I mean, I'm going to give, how I stand, but Obama even. It's like, Obamacare, I want this done. And I think he knew the polls were against it. I don't think he gave a shit.
No.
Which is okay. That's what he wanted to do.
I will always say that there was not a mandate for national health care.
He decided he wanted it.
And
the polls did say that 60% were against it.
And I also said, He's gonna martyr himself on the altar of healthcare.
Well, whatever. I mean, but if that's what you want to do,
any kind of
the hell with it. You think George Patton? You know,
did Patton take a poll?
Yeah.
No, he slapped a soldier.
Let me tell you,
here's my poll.
Slap more than one. But
get out there, fight.
Yeah. Anyway, you missed a couple. I got a
yeah. Who
I
else do you have
and
here?
A death. A birth and a death. 1842. Alfred Marshall.
Alfred Marshall.
Yeah. Big influence on economics.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't know. Influenced Keynes, but he didn't learn from him. Apparently, dumb shit. And Pigou, who learned something, but he's kind of a socialist too. But this guy actually, you know, like when we were talking about the other day, we're talking about the supply and demand, X and all that.
Yeah.
This guy came up with all that.
The very simple.
Yeah, yeah. He codified
XY axis for supply and demand.
Well, a lot of economics he codified as math. But, and to his credit, this is what he said. Math to me is just a shorthand for economics. This is not described, which is the problem with a lot of people say with economics now. They've got it to derivatives and, you know, functions, et cetera, and economics has been turned into a math, more of a math course, which even Keynes said is not. It's not a math. It's a philosophy more than anything, and that's what I think he got from Marshall. But this guy was a big influence on the economists of today.
Commend him. All right.
In fact, I think, Gary Becker, well, he was influenced more by Pigou, but this guy, Gary Becker, is one of my favorite economists. Died
that
1984,
I
can't believe you left out this guy.
As George Gallup?
Yeah, except this guy was much more popular. Ed Gein.
I know that name.
Of course
Why do I know that name?
Well, all right. Leatherface.
Texas Chainsaw?
Norman Bates. Right? Yeah. Was
he the
Buffalo Bill? They were all based on Ed Gein.
All based on one guy?
Yeah. This is the guy that had all the lampshades made out of skin and the nipple belts. And yeah, but he didn't really kill. They think he killed a couple women, but he's a grave robber.
He's a post-mortem guy.
Right, he'd go in there and grab something to eat, you know, out of a grave.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they say,
But he had his fascination.
Only the fresh ones, though.
His
the old ones didn't smell too
good. His fascination is post-mortem, not actually committing the murder.
Yeah. They went to his house in Wisconsin.
That's interesting. Oh, what is it about Wisconsin and this stuff?
His mom died, and
the one in the bedroom? Did he keep her in the bedroom or something?
Well, he wanted to be her, so he gets all this skin. He's making himself a suit to be mommy.
So this is the Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, that too. And Ed Gein.
Wow.
In fact, that's what, if you watch the movie Hitchcock, I think he picks up the book by Bloch, I think the guy's name is, that wrote a book about Ed Gein.
Yeah, and he goes, because he tells everybody, this is my next book, and they all go, Hitch, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Oh, Ed Gein.
1984 he died.
Well, you know, I told you to watch this American Ripper about trying to see if H.H. Holmes of Chicago and Jack the Ripper are the same guy. There's nothing hardcore evidence at this point in the show, but they're making some circumstantial connections that are fascinating. So it's definitely worth the watch.
All right.
It's definitely, if nothing else, you'll learn a lot about the Ripper.
I still got to watch the one on Betty and Joan. Is that still on?
No, that's in close. You can just watch.
Can I just get on the internet and watch that?
No, it's on demand.
Oh.
It's on demand, or you can.
All right.
Ask the experts.
Yes, we have sources.
To facilitate.
That obey every law of copyright. I want to stress that.
All right. July 26th.
Ed Gein's birthday, or death day.
The thing that influences the world we live in today, I got to tell you, know what I think it is? I think it's Truman giving us the CIA and the NSC. I think that's it. I'd love to say it's the post office. I'd love to say it's
No.
It's a whole bunch of other things.
NSC, yeah.
But it truly is, you know, is the security state and the influence the security state has had on American foreign policy.
Yeah,
and
we needed it.
Even internal.
Sure, because the Ruskies were, you know, they were coming, so we had to have all this.
Right.
Well, let's quote H.L. Mencken one more time on democracy.
Go ahead.
The theory that the common people know what they want and deserve to get it, good and hard.
Good and hard. Never ceases to crack me up. Hey, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. Also, like us on Instagram as well. You can follow us there. Plus, subscribe and subscribe and subscribe again. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, any major podcast outlet will do. And when you do, if you would, consider leave us a 5-star review or a 4-star review. But leave us a review of the show. Wouldn't mind that at all. It'd help us out greatly. All right. For Armand Kachigian and producers Brian Allen, Brian Kroc, Andrew Allen, and writer Corey Smith, I'm Tony Hubert. And when July 27th rolls around, we will be right here to tell you about it at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.